I kind of had a choice at that point.
Not just being patient with the process, but being grateful with the process.
And I'm like, man, I went to my dad straight after the game. I'm like, yo, like this shit can't happen anymore, man. I always try to take the good out of any negative situation.
You know, I have players coming in, Xavier, and they'd be like, I played so bad. You know, sometimes I'd be like, hey, bro, hey, I don't know, we can't do nothing about that. I can tell you what we can do, we can get some work in right now.
Like, if you're not doing plyometrics, you're losing out on a lot of potential for performance.
My dad had these tapes of the Laker game. I got to a point where I said, you know, I want to play basketball. And I just always wanted to make sure I had the edge over people.
It became a part of me, you know. I didn't want anybody to get to be better than me.
This episode is brought to you by Whoop. Whoop is the only 24/7 wearable technology that measures the everyday stressors both inside and outside of work and training. Whoop measures the physiological data related to sleep, including the quality, duration, and consistency of sleep, strain, which is the internal load from external stress, and recovery, which is the readiness to perform. Whoop uses these three key metrics to call out areas for improvements and reinforce positive habits. If you're looking to join the team, use my discount code BBALL at checkout or just click the link in my description to get a free 30-day trial with Whoop. Come join the team. Let's level up together.
Welcome back to another episode of the Basketball and Barbells podcast. This has been an episode that's been in the making for quite some time now. You know, we've been going back and forth with, you know, the special guests, trying to get them on Instagram Live, getting them on the podcast, partly because of my scheduling, but finally able to get on, and I appreciate his time. But today we have Tyler Lesher. All right, he's actually the assistant athletic trainer at FAU down in Boca Raton, Florida, which is kind of near my stomping ground. I'm from Orlando. Recently joined in November 2020. He actually joined after spending the past 4 years in the NBA with the Greensboro Swarm, which is the Charlotte Hornets G League affiliate. Again, this is somebody who I want to get on for quite some time. Got a diverse background, worked as a strength conditioning coach, but also athletic trainer. So he's hit both sides of kind of like, you know, the field. So Tyler, I just want to say thank you, man, for hopping on today and lending us your time.
Dude, for sure. You know more about my background than I do.
That's awesome. Like, you were like, 4 years.
Right? I was like sitting there clicking back. I was like, man, it was like 3-4, one with the Cavs. Like, yeah, damn.
Oh, good, man. I got to do my research, man, whenever I get a guest on, because, again, I already know I want to make sure I get pretty deep into it, but I definitely want to give the floor over to you. Just kind of talk a little bit about your background and how you were able to maneuver your way into the NBA working with the Greensboro Swarm. You know, I know a little bit more about your background, just kind of reading up on it, but I want you to tell the audience and those listening, like, you know, how you got started and how you were able to kind of, you know, parlay your way into the NBA.
Yeah, for sure. First and foremost, thanks for having me on. This is going to be an awesome experience and great time. Like you said, we've been going back and forth, so like I'm pretty stoked to finally be on here. I mean, like, I'm a little kid from Wyoming. You know, like, I grew up in Wyoming, went to a small JUCO in my hometown. I went through nursing school, hated it. As I was doing that, I was taking sports med classes to be full-time and pretty much just scrapped nursing, went into sports med, athletic training. So I got my little associate's degree there and then transferred to New Mexico State down in Las Cruces, finished my bachelor's up in athletic training there. So that's when I became certified. After that, I went to Chico State, California. Awesome school. But the reason why I went there was because it was one of the only programs where I could go and work with the men's basketball team as a graduate assistant athletic trainer. You know, if you go Division I or whatever, you're going to end up working like track or something else. Like, nobody's got a GA spot for a men's basketball team. So I chose to go D2, did that for 2 years. And then during pretty much my undergrad process, just like most people that are trying to get into the NBA, I got lucky and I met the old head athletic trainer for the Denver Nuggets at a conference. And more or less, like, to be honest, I showed up really hungover to this conference. And like I had like just enough in me to go up to him. Nobody knew who he was, but like growing up in Wyoming, the only sports that we ever get to watch are you know, Nuggets, Rockies, Broncos. So like those are our teams. So like I recognized, his name was Jim Gillen. I recognized him from being on TV and sitting on the bench and whatnot. So I went up to him and I was just, you know, really, really open and honest. I told him, I was like, hey, like, I really want your job. And he said, be at the Pepsi Center tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. So I showed up the next day at 8 a.m. And his assistant, Dan Schmensky, who is now the head athletic trainer there, met me at the door and just started showing me the ropes. And then really throughout the course of my master's, I never let go of that contact. You know, Dan got moved up to the head and he's now like one of my really good friends, but he was able to plug me after I finished my master's. And he called me randomly one day and was like, what are you doing? Where are you working? And to be honest, I was a bouncer at a local bar in New Mexico at the time. So I told him that, and he goes, I got three teams on the line, the Bulls, Warriors, and the Cavaliers. And so I sent off my resume and four interviews with the Warriors and three with the Cavs, ended up getting the Cavs job. So that was a season-long internship with them. And then they're, at the time, it was still the D-League. So I worked with, you know, I was able to see, like, guys like LeBron, Kyrie, that was 2016-17. So it was a really cool, like, eye-opening experience into the world of the NBA at, you know, an incredibly high level, you know, off the jump. And obviously, you know, just being in the D-League then, you meet the athletic trainers playing, you know, from the games, hotels, whatever it might be. And then, you know, met Aaron Karkow, who was the Swarm's athletic trainer. He got pulled up to the Hornets during that off season, gave me a call, and the rest was a wrap from there. You know, next thing I know, I was moving to Charlotte and I was the head strength coach and head athletic trainer for them, doing equipment, everything else, helping with travel. And it was a grind. There's like the G does not mean Gator in the G League. G means grind. Don't let anybody tell you opposite. That is the grind league.
Right, man. No, that's crazy because, you know, not even to cut you off, but it's just hearing your story. Because for anyone listening, this is actually new to me as well. Like, you know, like I think just hearing your story going from, you know, like D2 and then G League, like, because I know, you know, a couple other G League guys and, you know, I actually worked at the D2 level and that the resources, you know, access to the resources is challenging. Like, you got a lot of problems and you got to be a problem solver. And the same thing, you know, from what I understand in the G League, like you just kind of touched on, is it's not like you just train the players. You don't just go through the training. You don't just have your one job. You got to wear a lot of hats. Like, you got to do travel, right? You have to, you know, pack the bag. You know, you have to do, yeah, exactly. You got to do everything. So I kind of wanted to ask, do you feel like going in D2 and then working in G League and then, you know, doing those, basically being a problem solver, do you feel like that kind of prepared you a lot more for where you are currently right now with FAU, which I imagine maybe you don't wear as many hats, but you probably still do. But do you feel like that was necessary as part of your journey to kind of get you prepared for, you know, the position that you're at right now?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all been a giant, you know, building blocks of the foundation. You know, Division II, we didn't have any resources, barely had a weight room. The training room had like six tables in it, and it's the size of my living room that I have now. You know, I mean, it was just so small and condensed. And but it was an incredible learning experience because, like you said, like you have to learn how to accomplish a lot with little. And then you go into the G League. You know, when I was with the Canton Charge team, we were practicing out of it would be like me and Quinn Cook, and we'd be practicing out of a church gym, you know, like oh, wow. We didn't have anything for that, you know, like we didn't have a weight room. It was like they had this upstairs, a couple treadmills, a couple dumbbells kind of thing. But because it was a church gym with paying members, like if we were up there working out, if they came in, like they needed to use that bench or whatever, we had to move. you know, so some like 70-year-old guy like, hey, like, can I get this? And we're like, yeah. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm over here, like, we're with Quinn and like some of these other guys, like, this is wild, like, this is mind-blowing, you know. And then you go on the road and you're staying in these hotels that just have the worst you know, fitness centers and everything. Like, you just got to do a lot with very, very little, sometimes nothing, you know. And that's when, you know, bands, the minimal movements, functional movements, where you're just, you know, doing a lot with nothing to get these guys ready for games. And that's kind of how the beginnings of it started, of just learning different mobility exercises, flows, whatever it might be, to just get, you know, get the guys ready. And then when I went to the Hornets, that's really when, you know, I call it my professional education really took off. I was surrounded by an incredible staff, and you know, they pushed me beyond the whole different level. So that's really when like everything else took off. But yeah, like being down here, like, we have pretty good resources. Like, we're definitely not a high major Division I team by any means. You know, it's not like we have our own weight room like Kentucky or anything like that. Right. However, I'm in the process of building one for us, so like, that's going to be big time. But yeah, like, it's, we do what we can with what we have. And you know, we got good effects last year. This last season was my first team there, so, or first year there. So it's, you know, it's fun. It's good. Like, it's, you know, Florida's tight, obviously, and the guys are down here. They're receptive, you know, like all of them, just like every other college player, they all want to go pro. So I have really good buy-in with them, which is, you know, the key, main key to everything. You know, if you don't have proper buy-in between, you know, clinician and athlete, or clinician patient, you're really not going to accomplish much. So like, that's absolutely huge with me and my players, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think even you just kind of touching on it, which is crazy. Like, can you imagine, like, you know, someone who may not recognize Quinn Cook, an older adult, just saying, hey, can I borrow this bench? And this professional basketball player, you're like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, like, that's, I'm just like picturing it right now, but that's the reality. And I think it was, you know, that's why, like, when you told the story, it kind of reminded me when I was working D2, and I mean, it was me and one other coach, and we had 19 teams. So I think I had like 9 teams, and like, you have that kind of volume, and you don't necessarily have, you know, a giant weight room, and you're just trying to make it work, like you said. So you try to utilize space. You might not have that much space. The dumbbells may not necessarily, like you said, you might not have the greatest access. So yeah, just being flexible, I think that's important. And I appreciate the fact that you kind of, you know, that helped accelerate your own career path. Because I think for me, like, being thrown in those trenches, and then for you going through that as well, it prepared you. Because now, like, when you do have these resources of more than you did before, as you continue to build at FAU, now you're in a position where, like, it's more so like you're making more out of less, right? And it's not necessarily like you're letting every stone go unturned. But yeah, I think that's really important, honestly, for new coaches and trainers. I think it's really important that they get that hands-on experience where situations are not ideal. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of coaches and trainers, like, they see Duke, like you said, Kentucky, you know, they want to go D1, but I think you appreciate it more when you got to basically go through the shit, you know, for lack of a better phrase. Like, you got to go through some shit to really appreciate that. And so I think even now, like, you went through that, and that's why you're able to go to Charlotte. That's why you are in Florida, with the sun is always 99 degrees, 100% humidity, but just, you know, building out a weight room. I think you got to go through that shit for sure.
Yeah. And dude, like, I say to people all the time, and like, a lot of, if you've been in the G League, like, everybody will say the same thing, but like, I think it needs to be a prereq that you have to do a year of the G League before you go to the NBA, because you have to experience that grind before you're, you know, allotted the luxury of the NBA team. You know, because like, you don't realize how much of a difference it is between the two until, you know, like, when I was in the Hornets or the Swarm, people would email me all the time, like, asking me, like, if I needed interns and whatnot. And, like, you know, and when I left here, I had people asking me about my job and everything. I'd be like, guys, like, you say you want this job, but you don't know how much of a grind it is. You know, like right. it's a whole different world. But yeah, man, like it just, nonetheless, it all prepared me to be here in this situation. I have an incredible coaching staff around me that, and an awesome group of players. So it's, you know, that I have their full support. They, you know, they're backing me in like any and all, almost all decisions that I make around here. So we're getting ready to make some huge strides, but yeah, man, it's been a grind, and it's all paid off, you know, like looking back at everything, the division two times and, you know, the late night road trips, early practices, you know, freezing on a tarmac in, you know, Toronto, 3 a.m., like all that stuff. It's like, man, like awesome life experiences, but damn, it was a grind.
Right, man. But yeah, man, I think it's like, I think that's a good idea, you know, just having that prerequisite. I think even in, to be honest, and like, I don't mean to, you know, shut any barriers down or anything like that, or excuse me, like just build barriers, but almost before you go D1, I think you have to kind of go through everything, or at least a year's worth of D2, maybe even JUCO, because I was at the JUCO level, and it was the same thing you were talking about, where I'm basically training, you know, the basketball teams, and we have regular students like walking through the gym. Like, it wasn't a big weight room, but they're all using like dumbbells, and so it was a weird mixture at the time, because, you know, I think I had this idea of like, oh, I'm training a college basketball team, you know what I mean? I'm gonna have these resources, and it's like, we got dumbbells up to 40 pounds.
Yeah.
We have like two squat racks, and then the general population is also utilizing the gym.
Right.
So it's almost
in the squat rack.
Yeah, man. It's like, come on, man. So it was like, I had to kind of, at times it's almost like, I had to freestyle. I had to look at it and say, okay, cool. Like, we're not doing that. But yeah, man, it makes you appreciate that. So I think, again, I'm not trying to build barriers, but you also weed out those who are not serious about it, because they just see the glitz and glamour. But again, like, every level is going to be a grind, but you just got to appreciate it for sure.
Most definitely.
I definitely want to touch on this topic, because I know you're really heavy into it. But just talking about the nutrition side. So I know a little bit about the story you had where you got into nutrition and how you kind of began to build your own program. But I want to give that to you. Like, what inspired you to begin to branch off from just a typical strength and conditioning coach or even athletic trainer and begin to learn and deep dive into nutrition, and, you know, what inspired that process?
Man, to be honest, pretty sure you know him, but Andre Mattson was kind of the breaking point or the tipping point to really open my eyes of, you know, what systemic inflammation was. And, you know, he was my strength coach when I was in this with the Swarm my last year there. And I was getting ready to go into my doctorate program, and I was trying to decide, like, what I should do for more or less a thesis or capstone project. And him and I were just going back and forth talking about nutrition and these different things. And I just kept reading some literature and like really starting to figure out what systemic inflammation was and how it, you know, what it causes, how it's caused. And really just, you know, the various cause and effect relationships all the way down to the cellular level, and then up to, you know, the level of, you know, metabolic syndromes that we have, you know, running rampant today. So that was kind of like the initial spark. At the same time, your boy was a little overweight, and I was like, well, you know, I'm working out every day. I'm eating pretty well. I thought I was. And I was like, I'm not losing weight. And like, I'm over here watching Andre like lift and do all these things. I'm like, what's going on here? So that's really when it was like, okay, like, let's look at inflammation and what it actually is. And then once we addressed that, and like, I went like, you know, head first into the world of inflammation and how to deal with it, then like, you know, I dropped like 30, 40 pounds in just like a short period of time. But like, I did it like, you know, what I would call the quote unquote right way. Not that there's a right or wrong way necessarily, but like an effective way for maintaining health. So throughout that process, it's just been, you know, nutrition, books, and doing, you know, continuously learning about how to mitigate systemic inflammation and that inflammatory response. And I guess, like, luckily enough, the, you know, being an athletic trainer, I can utilize, you know, the same approaches on a nutritional level and a modality level with my players, because, you know, we have to control inflammation with them continuously, right? Like, that's the name of the game when it comes to injury prevention, injury management, you know, load management. It's a hot topic still, but you know, all those different things. So that's kind of how the process started. And then COVID hit, and I shouldn't say I saw the writing on the wall, but like when it first hit and everybody was kind of like, you could see like the fear was starting to build up. I was, you know, I grabbed a kettlebell from the Swarm weight room, and I just noticed that like people just like weren't going outside or doing anything. And, you know, there was just kind of that fear of being out in public. And I was like, people aren't going to go to the gyms anymore. Like, what are they going to do? You know, like, we already eat super unhealthy as a population whole. And like, we're going to blow up. Like, the obesity level is going to blow up like crazy. So that's what ended up sparking the idea for, you know, the side business and the weight loss program mainly. But yeah, man, it was just, you know, that was really it. and throughout that process, it just became like, all right, like, what do I got to do to, you know, without going back to school and getting a, you know, certification or a degree in nutrition or anything like that, like, you know, how can I do something to get people to listen to this, you know, the shit I spew, more or less. So I went through the precision nutrition courses, got certified through that. And then obviously my doctorate's in leadership and health and exercise wellness. So with a huge emphasis into systemic inflammation and how to manage it to increase quality of life. So those have been my, you know, just my bread and butter as of like the last couple of years for sure.
Right. I think even, and it's crazy because I think it was definitely like earlier, I think it was this year, but you kind of touched on this, or last year, I should say, you touched on it saying that you lost, like you said, like it was like 30, 40 pounds, you know, and it kind of alerted me because I was like 30, 40 pounds. And it was just crazy because, you know, Andre, we haven't touched on it too deep, but he's like touched on it. And Andre's a smart dude. Shout out to Andre. I'm trying to get him on the podcast whenever he gets the time, but he touched on that too. And, you know, he talked about inflammation, and I know that's something that down in Miami at DBC, like, they touch on it as well. Just talking about inflammation, it was kind of like around when I heard David Alexander start to talk about it, when I kind of started to pay attention to it. But for those that are listening, because I do have some athletes that are listening, and, you know, other coaches and trainers who are maybe interested in going into nutrition, can you kind of break down, you know, what is systemic inflammation, and maybe can you give a couple of examples? Obviously not too much. I don't want to take too much of your program, but just, you know, what kind of causes that, what foods, and maybe even just habits they have.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, more or less how it works is like, you know, there's pretty much two types of inflammation, right? We either have a local inflammatory response. So that's what we kind of get, you know, tweak an ankle, muscle strain, ankle sprain, whatever. And that's going to be kind of that, you know, that damaged tissue where it's just at a localized area, you know, that usually takes between like, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to build back, you know, from day one all the way back to, you know, return to play, whatever it might be. A systemic inflammatory response, you know, is really characterized by a typical multi-syndrome phase specific, like, pathological process. And this is from systemic damage, you know, that involves an inflammatory reaction from immune cells, the endothelial sites, our plasma, blood count, all the connective tissue, all of that stuff. So what happens is we end up getting a microcirculatory disorder between like our organs and tissues. So that more or less is like summed up by just saying like we get a continuous low-grade inflammatory response, which is stemmed from a variety of sources. So those sources can be from nutrition, you know, poor nutrition, lifestyle choices, lack of physical activity, or possible like overtraining activities, you know, like improper exercise prescription, you know, decreased sleep, pretty much like everything that everybody always talks about, right? Is, you know, nutrition, sleep, anything that's going to throw off your hormones, i.e. Plastics, you know, unfiltered water, all those different sources. So realistically, how it works is we consume these sources. And what people don't understand is that, like, our gut lining is only two cells thick, which is about, if I'm right, probably if you took a piece of paper and you cut it in half thin wise, that's probably like how big it is or how little. So it doesn't take a lot, obviously, to blow up that gut lining. When that happens, and it happens almost with everything that we eat now, we're going to get an inflammatory response because the foods that we eat are highly processed. They're, you know, not, they usually don't come from like ethical sources. They're cooked with poor oils that just tear us apart, and that inflammation starts. Well, because obviously, you know, we're told that we need to eat numerous times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, we're continuously eating over and over and over and over and over, that inflammatory response starts and it just never stops. So over the course of time, you know, we start getting some body pains, the fatigue, bloating, weight gain. People start to notice that, like, they get like more and more frequent infections. They start sleeping like shit, like they think that they're sleeping well, but they're really not. Their anxiety starts going through the roof. We get a lot of brain fog. We're seeing a lot of like mood disorders and depression kind of things. So these are all like big, big symptoms of systemic inflammation. And you kind of see it between 6 weeks to 3 months and more, you know, because it doesn't take a lot for this to happen. Once we get the, you know, systemic inflammation going, it's, I don't want to say it's easy to get rid of, but it's not exactly like the hardest thing. It's just people aren't willing to do what's, you know, what's needed of it. So the systemic inflammatory response system is going, and that ends up causing insulin resistance. Insulin resistance ends up obviously causing fat over the course of time. Fat buildup ends up producing pro-inflammatory cytokines, and then that's our cycle right there. So the increased fat, increased inflammation, decreased sleep, you know, increased obesity, and that's our cycle. And it just continues and continues and continues. So eventually you got to break that, right? And that's really kind of where my program came in, was like, all right, well, there's only a handful of ways to actually break this. So that's mainly where the program is, but that's what I deal with my players a lot, is trying to get them to understand that you are what you eat, you know? So, you know, I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with going out and slamming a pizza every once in a while, but continuously, you know, eating fast food joints, going to, let's just, Chipotle, whatever it might be, you know, like, they're not cooking these foods in, you know, the best oils. They're not using avocado oil, right? Like, they're using vegetable canola oil that's, you know, 3 cents to use so that they can make their 10 bucks off a burrito. So, you know, that's a huge, huge part of it. And as we kind of go into it more and more when it comes to like recovery, that's the name of the game. How can you break that? In my opinion, at least, is how can you break that cycle for an athlete to improve their recovery? So obviously it's improved nutrition and improved sleep. And once we do those two things mainly, that's when we're going to see huge recovery responses much quicker than like everybody else. Like, Love Normatec boots. Not going to do anything if you're eating, you know, piss poor foods every day. Love Theragun and Hypervolt. Not going to do shit if you're, you know, continuously damaging your body from the inside out, you know. So we can do all these things from the outside in, but realistically, until you address your inside out, you know, what really are you accomplishing? So that's kind of my approach with it, if all that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love how you even, I mean, we both, you know, we both kind of feel the same way. It's just like, there is no implement, there's no modality that will put a Band-Aid on a broken arm, so to speak. Like, yeah, it makes you feel better now, but are we really addressing what's going on? And it's even just like you touching on that and just, you know, talking about, you know, the inflammatory response. Like you said, it's a vicious cycle because, you know, poor sleep is going to fuel, you know, poor health, poor nutrition choices, because now, like, you're, you know, like you said, brain fog, like you're craving junk food. And then it's like you said, like you're eating crap and then you're going to feel like shit, right? And then you're going to sleep like shit, and it's just going to continue and continue. So where's the intervention? And so I actually want to ask you a little bit about, because I, you know, talk about sleep and not just getting 8 hours, because I think we talk, you know, a lot of people, general population says get 8 hours of sleep, but is it high quality sleep, right? So with, especially with, you know, the athletes that you've been working with, you know, what are some, I hate calling them hacks, but what are some tips that you give your, you know, your players to say, hey, let's actually just get 8 hours of sleep if we can, 8 to 10 hours of sleep, but how can we get high quality sleep, even if it's not necessarily a lot of sleep? Like, what are some things that maybe you implemented that they kind of followed and maybe kind of built some healthier habits for them when it comes to their sleep?
Yeah. So like a couple of things are like, when it comes to me addressing sleep with my players, is first things first, put the phone away, turn the TV off, decrease the screen time, which is the hardest thing that they're going to do. Right. You know, when it comes to really addressing cortisol, melatonin cycles and whatnot. And I mean, you see it with your athletes, I'm sure. I see it nonstop with my guys, with the pros. Like, you know, they come lay on the table and they just stare at their phones. And it's not just like one phone, it's two phones, three phones, and TVs going on at the same time. And there's just too much artificial blue light that is keeping our cortisol levels spiked for way too long, for more or less. Like, our bodies just don't know when it's time to go to bed because of the amount of blue light that we're getting. So rule number one is like, get rid of, turn off the phones, or at least do not disturb, put one of the, you know, night shifts on it, anything that's going to limit it. I've talked to my coaches here about getting some blue light blockers. I wear them. I think they work, you know, I wear them usually about 3 hours before I go to bed, 2.5 hours before I go to bed, just to limit the blue light. And I think that works better than taking melatonin, to be honest. So highly recommend that. I'm a big fan of a contrast shower before bed. So 20 seconds hot, 10 seconds cold. If you want to be a cycle like me, like, I only take cold showers now. incredible in recovery hack, FYI. But like, so cold showers or contrast showers. Make sure, this is one thing I see a lot of athletes do, is they will turn like their room temperature up to like 75 plus degrees. You know, you need to be down there around like 66, 67. Our bodies sleep better in cold states. Definitely don't eat anything between 2.5 to 3 hours before going to bed, which is really hard, because like, what happens is people have a very non-dense caloric, you know, non-nutritious dinner usually at just at like 5 or 6. So then by the time 8 or 9 comes around, they're hungry again. So then the first thing that happens is they're going to reach for peanut butter jelly, like something that's quick, easy, that's, you know, going to get that simple sugar fix that we all start to crave. You know, that is going to throw off sleep incredibly, you know, because we might eat that at 9, 9:30. Well, it's going to take 2.5, 3 hours before we get our glucose response and our insulin response, which means that our body's just going to ramp back up, you know, at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And we're just like, well, that, why am I awake? Well, dude, you ate right before you went to bed. Like, your body doesn't know it's time to sleep. So limiting eating. What else? Those are the big things off the top of my head that I got. But I'm a huge fan of keeping like your apartment, your room, whatever might be cold, like, you know, below 69, 68 degrees. Our bodies just sleep way better at it.
Right. I like how you even touched on, you know, just the fact that like your body never knows when to go to sleep. Like, so circadian rhythm is something I talk to my players a lot about. And it's just not even necessarily just breaking down the science, but I basically say, hey, same thing you touched on. Like, if you're on your phone late at night and, you know, basically like you're staring into the sun, that's why I break it down with them, because they're in high school sometimes. Like, if you're staring at the sun and your brain thinks it's time to be awake and you're trying to get ready to go to bed, like, that's going to throw off, like you said, like, just your body's ability to recognize what time is time to go to bed. So I talk to them a lot about that. How much they listen to me, I don't necessarily know. Some of them do, some of them don't. But yeah, just circadian rhythm and just developing those sleep routines. Like, I don't think any one of my players that I speak to before we talk about sleep intervention has a bedtime routine.
Right.
And I'm like, that's like the most simple. They ask, like, how do I get better sleep? I'm like, well, what's your bedtime routine? And they just look at me like a deer in headlights. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about that. Right. Just like, you know, I was just talking to them about, like you touched on, just simple little things. Like, it doesn't have to be anything major. But it's, again, like the continuous application it is, right? So like, are you continuously eating before bed? And I get, that's the, probably the number one thing I get. And then even just the temperature, like I tell people, hey, like, you know, keep your room cool, or even just getting blackout curtains.
Yeah.
That's actually helped me a ton. You know, I recently just got some blackout curtains, and, you know, there's times where I wake up naturally, like, you know, 5, 6 versus my alarm. And mm-hmm. I forgot who exactly said it, but there was someone that said, if your alarm makes you up, you weren't finished sleeping. And that was a great quote that I love so much. So now I'm trying to get to the point where I personally wake up without my alarm. And that's something I try to shoot for my athletes. But I definitely want to touch on that, because, again, like, I get players and, you know, general population will say, hey, let's sleep for 8 hours. I'm like, okay, well, let's go for quality more so than quantity. And once you get the quality down, then we can start to kind of get more quantity of it. But if you're getting 8 hours of shitty sleep, it doesn't really matter at that point, really.
Exactly, man. The goal should be like 6 to 7. And again, mm-hmm. this is my opinion. I don't have any, you know, like, evidence base behind this, but 6 to 7 of high quality sleep for an athlete, like a high level athlete, with maybe a 30 minute nap, you know, during the day at some point. And I would even go as far to say, don't take the nap and substitute that with a meditation instead. That's one of my big things is like, so, and the reason why I say that is if you fall asleep, you know, like there's plenty of studies out there say like, all right, what's like 22 minutes is the perfect nap, right? Or the perfect nap time. Or, you know, some people say it's 45, whatever. In my opinion, when players go to sleep, or players, humans go to sleep, you don't know what, you know, if what sleep cycle you're going to be in when you fall asleep, right? So you might fall asleep and go immediately into a deep sleep because your body needs it or whatever. So if you say you set an alarm for 30 minutes later and you're in a deep sleep or not in, you know, coming out of a deep sleep state and your alarm goes off, well, you're immediately going to be shocked with, you know, an alarm phase, but then that grogginess is going to catch up to you eventually, right? Like, we've all experienced it where take a nap and you wake up and you're like, shit, like, I'm ready to go. And then about 30 minutes later, you're like, man, I'm tired again. For me and the athletes I've worked with, you don't get that from meditation, right? Because you don't sleep. So you're able to keep your wake cycle going and then come out way more recovered and improved, like mental clarity kind of improvement than you were compared to sleep, right? So we're just negating or cutting out that possibility. And then, you know, the effects of meditation have obviously been well documented now across, you know, mental health and energy levels, everything like that. So I thought it should be a great tool or asset to substitute napping and not have to ever worry about that groggy feeling post nap with, hey, like I'm mentally alert, I'm well, I'm excited, I'm not tired, you know, like I'm ready to fire up on all levels. So that's yeah. My little two bits on a like an afternoon nap.
Yeah, I think that even that's a good point, because you touched on it a little bit without even saying it, but just like, you know, basically like fight or flight, like being on your phone and, you know, social media, I'm not even the social media, but just, you know, going into meditation and getting into that parasympathetic state where now it's not like, and it comes down even like the music we listen to too, right? Like at least like when it comes to, you know, basketball players and that I've experienced and been around, right? It's just always, you know, rap, right? You know what I mean? Like it's always, you're listening to Lil Baby, listening to Drake, whatever the case is. And it's always, you know, just aggressive, you know, all the time. And then you go to practice, right? So you're training, you're on the court, whatever the case is, and listen to the same music. And right after the session, you listen to the same music. And then before you go to bed, and so like you're always on go, which is to a point, like that's just, it's just gonna be detrimental. So even you just kind of touching on just like meditating, getting into, you know, parasympathetic and just kind of like relaxing. Like that's one thing I like to do with, you know, some of my players, like post session, like we'll listen to like, you know, just some music they normally don't listen to, like R&B, right? Like a lot more slowed down, right? But they're just so jacked up all the time. It's like, all right, let's get you to calm down, because that starts the recovery process right there.
Yeah,
for sure. So even you just, you even touching on it was like something that I noticed.
Yeah, dude, the other thing about like music, and I actually just put a thing up on Instagram about this, and like I've piss my players off a lot by this, like the type of music that they listen to, you know, we could call it rap, whatever, is very negative. And I don't know about you, man, but like I'm huge on vibes. And if you continuously surround yourself with negative vibes, you know, that affects you at a subconscious level. And it's gonna have a profound effect, you know, on your mentality, your outlook, over the course of time, right? So like my, you know, my running joke with the team is like, we need more house music, because there's nothing in the house music, right? It's the electronic music, it's happy music.
Right.
But that's what I try and get the guys to really do. And like you said, you know, change it up, like listen to R&B music. Like there were days where, you know, I'd have like recovery days, I still do them, where I'll play like, you know, very lo-fi, laid back, easy to listen to music, because it, again, it activates that parasympathetic state to where they come in, they might hop on the table or be going through basic movements. And it's just being in that relaxed state and, you know, positive vibes. You know, I'm a big fan and thinker that that affects us on our cellular level. So if we can, you know, implement that to decrease inflammation from a whole, you know, through one of our senses, because that's really what we got to do, right? Like we have to increase everything through various senses. So, I mean, that's why I'm a huge fan of manual therapy. There's our touch, music, there's our ears, putting like plants around, because the color green has been shown to like bring us at ease quite a bit.
Right.
And then like I'll put light a candle, you know, have breathe thing, whatever it might be, you know, and there's our, you know, our nose. And man, it's just, it's attacking all these different ways or all these different, aspects attacking the body. And that's kind of another approach I have for it.
That's actually a really good damn point that you touched on, was just like the senses, you know, like I had never really thought about it. And I like the fact that you brought up even the color green, but that's actually really dope. Like just thinking about it, like it comes down to music and then like the color green, but I've never actually sat down and considered like, okay, like let's get it through our, you know, all our senses and like our touch, like you said, the manual therapy. But that's one thing, even like my players, like getting them outside, right? Like, I forgot who it was. You know, I read this in a book somewhere. It might have been a Bruce Lee book, but he just talks about going outside and feeling the grass, like taking your socks off and being in nature, grounding. Yeah.
And vitamin N, nature is everything. That's one of the biggest reasons why I came to Florida, because I was like, I am a mile away from the beach. You know, it's worth it. You know, it's worth it. Mental health. It's like, you can't have a bad day if you can go walk on the beach.
Oh yeah, facts, man. It's like, if you're having a bad day on the beach, then I don't know, man. Like, that's just, we gotta talk about that. But even then, it's just like, you know, you touching on just getting getting a different scenery. I think that's super important, because if you really think about it, and I heard Max Schmars will talk about this a lot, but just, we're stress managers. You know what I mean? Like, yep. To a point, like, strength coaches that are just being in the performance field, like, stress, it accumulates. Like, they have, especially like at the college and high school level, pro level they have different types of responsibilities, but, you know, most student athletes, they have, you know, finals that they're going to have to study, they have classes, girlfriend, boyfriends, you know, there's all these other pieces moving along, and then they come in the weight room, they come to practice, and we're just stressing them even more. So it's like, where do they get this time to actually just, like, for lack of a better phrase, just chill? Like, when do they get to chill? And, like, I try to be, like, cognizant of that. And even when my players come in, sometimes, like, I'm like, all right, cool. Like, it's going to be a high day, blah, blah, blah. And they come in, and I can just read their face. I'm like, hey, what's going on? They're like, not much. So I already know it's going to be a shitty session if I just try to push them, just based on, like, you know, vibes like you talked about. So I might just throw it out and say, hey, let's just do active recovery. You know, you throw on some music, whatever. Or I'll just say, hey, like, let's just, I don't know, play horse or something, you know, something to kind of change the scenery or just change the environment as much as I can. To, again, like, to de-stress. Because I think in the grand scheme of things, end of the day, yeah, we got to make sure they're prepared. But I think, like you said, that plays into it is the ability to just get them to relax. Because over time, like, that stress accumulates. And eventually, like, the glass is going to overfill. It's going to, you know, you're going to spill it. And I think it's just important, like you just touched on, is, you know, just change the environment, change their vibe, because that's super important long term.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, going back to, like, the whole color green thing and whatnot, there's been, like, a handful of studies for hospital patients that are going through various, you know, recovery, you know, procedures and whatnot. The hospital bed that's next to the window versus the one that's not, how much quicker the patient with the window gets versus the other ones. We see it a lot, because, you know, like, it's just like a sign of, like, hope and, like, an outside world kind of thing. And then you add in the greens and, you know, the blue skies and stuff like that. So, like, that was kind of, like, how I got on to that whole level of going, like, all right, like, there's something here we got to look into. And then, yeah, like you said, like, when it comes to, like, managing stresses, that's another reason why, like, during the season, I'm a huge fan of microdosing weights for the players, because, like you said, like, dudes might come in and just not be feeling it. And, you know, some of these strength coaches during the season, you're like, they're working them out three times a week. Well, if you can't get your workout in, or, like, you know, a player's not feeling it, and all of a sudden you're out 33% of your weekly lift, right? That's a huge, huge piece. But if you're microdosing, you know, 20, 30 minute movements here and there throughout the week, it's like, all right, like, you're not feeling it today. Let's, you know, we're only going to miss, like, 10%, you know, of our weekly lift. So that's just another way of how I like to manage stress for the guys during season.
Yeah, that's a great point. I know I listened to Corey Schlesinger, like, how he touched on it, and it was similar thought processes. Like, you know, I think it's even more beneficial long term. I think I can't remember exactly who said it. I was talking to Yuri. Yuri's over in Amsterdam. He works with the 3-on-3 team out there, actually, who just won the championship. Shout out to them. But he touched on it, saying not necessarily just being married to certain exercises in a certain program, but just looking for adaptation. And then over time, you know, keeping the same, just increasing volume. So he just touched on, like you said, like 20, 30 minute lifts. Let's get where we need to get out of the session and then get them out. Because again, like, other stress they have, like practice and things like that in season, especially, like, is it really beneficial to keep them in there for an hour? Or is that just saying, like, you know, our ego is like, oh, this is important. It's like, it's important, but, you know, where does it fit in the pie of this athlete's overall just health and wellness? Like, end of the day, I think, again, like, microdosing is something that I want to implement a lot more. You know, I think it's also, like, it comes down to just access and availability and things like that, but that's always a thought process. And when I heard it from Corey, I was like, yo, this is genius. Like, I need to figure out a way how to implement this. But yeah, it's like you said, like, if you miss a third of your training program, you know, because you miss a day, right? Then, yeah, at that point, you're like, no, absolutely not. Like, we're not missing a day. And then long term, like you talked about, it's just gonna add up for the athlete, the player, whoever you're working with. But one thing I actually want to touch on before I forget it, because I definitely want to continue to talk about, you know, the recovery and things like that. So I get this a lot. I'm pretty sure you get this, and especially working in athletic training and G League, and especially probably college. So icing, I don't know if this is still a hot topic, man, but I get this all the time, and I share my thoughts on it. But I wanted to kind of see where your head was at in terms of, you know, do you implement icing, and, like, you know, when you do, and just kind of like your say philosophy on it, but just kind of your thoughts on it, because I get this a lot from everyone, man. So I had to bring you in the forefront of it.
Yeah, so personally, I don't ice. Like, my players come in, they want ice, I'm like, yeah, go ahead, whatever. You know, I think I'm more of a fan of, like, again, like, relating it back to, like, systemic inflammation, getting in the cold tub and getting it to, like, below 55 degrees and getting it up to your neck, where we're going to get a huge change from the inside out. You know, that's going to have an actual effect on inflammation, you know, throughout all body processes. People are going to argue for the rest of our lives on whether ice actually works or not. you know, like, let's just be real about that. I tend to, you know, I like the game ready, like, after an acute ankle sprain or, you know, an acute sprain of any joint. But, like, I'm not a big ice guy. Same way with, like, stretching, right? Like, I don't like stretching. Static stretching has been shown to not work over and over and over again. Yet we have athletic trainers wasting numerous amounts of times sitting there holding the player's, you know, hamstring in the air. And I am just like, you know, scrap that. Like, let's do something that's more functional. Let's get the players moving. What I've seen is, you know, with post-injury, whatever it might be, or even just like basic, you know, activation rehab, is just going through motions. And the sooner you can get the joints moving, the better it's going to be long-term. And what I've seen is, like, my recovery rates are substantially quicker from it. There are a couple players that have came up to me like, look, like, I just want to ice because, like, this works for me. I'm like, that's fine. Like, you know, it's a mental game as well, right? Like, you know, you got to be in the right mindset. And, like, athlete knows their body better than anyone else. So, you know, if they want ice, go ahead. Yeah, grab it. Like, I'm all for it. Like, it takes 30 seconds out of my time. Like, it's not like it's a
– right.
That big a deal. But you know, no, as far as that goes, like, I'm not a big fan of icing. Like I said, we're gonna be arguing about this for the rest of mankind, and nothing's gonna get accomplished from it. But I don't really see, like, the true effects of icing versus, like, hopping in a cold tub and getting, like, a true, like, systemic response from it. That's something I'm more inclined to do with players.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat as you, man, where it comes down to situation, I think context. So, like, I tell my players, they ask me, like, hey, should I ice this? And I'm like, well, it depends. Like, is game 7 tomorrow, right? Like, do we need to absolutely, like, for whatever reason, like, try to bring down the inflammation, and depending on the injury too, or whatever's going on, like, do we need you absolutely at your 100 or close to 100% tomorrow? If not, then I say, let the inflammation process take course, because that is, you know, that's where we're truly going to start to begin the repair process. Like, again, like, I think it depends on the athlete too. because I also, I'm a big fan of the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. So there are times where it's like a player comes in like, man, like, you know, I know how you feel about icing, but I just iced, you know, for 20 minutes earlier and I feel amazing. I'm like, okay, you know, like whatever at that point. But if a player asks me and they know, I'm like, hey, like, what's going on? And I'll probably 9 times out of 10 say, like, bro, just, it's okay. Or, yeah, you know, like, let's figure this out. But, I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. Like, I don't know if we'll ever get to, you know, there's no right or wrong, but I don't know if we'll ever get to, like, a general consensus on that. Same thing with stretching, too. I'm not, people know I'm not a big fan of static stretching. I'll do loaded mobility more than anything. So it's just, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, man, we're going to argue about this till we die at this point. We're going to be on our deathbed just like, well, how do you feel about icing? But now I get that all the time. And I know with you working both sides, strength and conditioning, and then athletic training, I know you probably get that every other day, probably every day for the most part, especially with basketball players and their, you know, patellar tendinopathy and things like that. They just think, oh, let me just throw some ice on it and I'm ready for practice.
That's exactly what it is, man. They come in, my knees hurt. Well, let's start moving. Well, they don't want to move because the one thing I've learned about being, you know, in the NBA and now here is that basketball players are the laziest people known to mankind. And they are incredibly talented in the weight room, in the court, training room. But when it comes to, like, doing the little things, just not going to happen, you know. So, like, yeah, with my college guys, like, you know, my knees hurt. It's like, yeah, you know, you're growing. You're a bundle of fascia. Like, you're just super restricted. Like, we got to do the things that are going to get you moving and loosen up this tissue versus – and that requires movement. You know, slapping 2 bags of ice on your knees is going to, like, you know, help you mentally for 15 minutes until you throw them off or, you know, cut them off, throw them in the parking lot. Like, you know, that's where I'm at with it for sure.
Yeah, man. No, it's funny because, like, I tell people too, I'm like, basketball, like, and this is funny, it's like a whole other conversation, but just like basketball players in general, like, there's no, I think it's changing now, but there's no culture of, like, training in the weight room, right? Like, that's always skill development. Like, that takes 90% of the youth basketball players that I've worked with, like AAU and then skills trainers and then practice. But again, like, we got to make sure we're balanced too, because of obviously, like, overtraining, overuse injuries. So they don't have that culture like football does. Like, yep, football is like, you know, you got to get in the weight room. It's a very physically demanding sport, but at the same time, it's almost like, like, you know, like, football is, oh, we hit in the weight room? Like, that's normal. Like, basketball, like you said, they're like, man, I'm not trying to get too big. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not trying to, for whatever reason, but at the same time, it's still necessary to make sure we stay healthy. And then, like you said, like, I tell them, hey, let's just do a wall sit or let's do Spanish squats, whatever. We'll do ISOs. We'll do 3 rounds of 45 seconds. You'll feel better. And they're looking at me like, nah, man, like, I'm good. So it's funny that you said that, like, they're super lazy, because I agree. Like, but at the same time, it's like the culture. But I think it's changing though, right? Like, I think if you can get the athlete to buy in, like you talked about earlier, then at that point they're just like, now you got one person in your corner. And then when you get one athlete, one player to kind of buy into it, then basketball players, like, they're human beings, so they're like sheep. They're like, oh, such and such is doing that, let me jump in on that. And then now the whole team is kind of buying into it.
Exactly. And, like, there's kind of, like, with every team and player, there's always that, like, aha moment that I've noticed with them is, like, you know, obviously I'm a big kettlebell guy, so I hammer functional movements with a kettlebell. And, you know, they'll go through, like, these, you know, various movements for a week plus or whatever, and then they'll go get on the court and go play, and it's, like, all of a sudden they're a little more springy. You know, they're jumping a little bit more higher. They're getting in the positions needed for the game. They're like, damn, like, all right, like, I need more of this. And that's kind of like that initial tick of going like, all right, we're gonna build in the weight room a little bit more. And, you know, my guys now saw it, hopefully they continue it. You know, the good part about, like, you know, the college levels, they don't have a choice, right? Like, when I say weights are at this time, they gotta be there. But you know, like, it's starting to get there. Like you said, the buy-in is everything. But, you know, they got to see it and they got to feel it first and foremost.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, that's super important, is, like, getting that initial whatever, like, that initial, I'd say, like, validation, right? Or whatever the case is. For basketball, that I noticed, like, and it depends on the athlete, but if I can get them jumping at least an inch higher, like, it doesn't matter what I tell them to do. If I tell them to do a handstand in the corner, like, they're going to do it. And it's just because, like, basketball is, you know, like, vertical sport, but that is where they see, like, they almost, like, validate themselves through the vertical jump. And it's like, you know, there's other parts to your game, but end of the day, like, that's the biggest thing I see. So, like, we'll do, like, little things, and it won't be anything major. Like, for me, it's like, I look at a basketball player, and, like, his mechanics suck as far as when it comes to jumping. So I just tweak his mechanics a little bit, and all of a sudden, he's like, whoa, I'm jumping higher. At that point, it's like, they get that buy-in, or even just, like, knee pain we're talking about. They feel a little bit better, even if it's, like, whatever it is relative to them, 10% better. They're like, wow, that doesn't hurt as much. At that point, like you said, they're going to be like, hey, man, like, I don't know what you're doing, but just whatever we're doing, just keep doing it. Exactly. But, yeah, man, it's getting that buy-in, it's so big. I think it comes down to, like, also understanding the sport and then also understanding just kind of, like, what that player is looking for, like, because the mental side of it is so important. Again, man, like, we could talk all day about this stuff, but cool. I just definitely wanted to wrap it up and just say I appreciate you for jumping on, but I want to make sure that the audience, those listening, they're interested in reaching out to you, where can they find you, you know, if you have your social media, whether it's email, and then even, like, just linking your website, whatever it is that you want, how can people find you?
Yep. So, like, I'm pretty active for the most part on Instagram, TLesh15. That's kind of like my brand for everything. My website, it's a little bit under management, under, you know, construction right now because I'm working on a new program. So it's a guys only program. So fellas, like, keep your eyes open. But that's on tlesher.com, and on Facebook, like, you guys can find me on there. I think it's T Lesher. That's the page. But yeah, reach out whenever. You know, I'm always down to talk shop with anybody. If anyone's got any questions, like, you know, I try and do my best with recovery and staying on top of some, you know, new groundbreaking things that, you know, quote unquote, seem to be working. So just kind of keep hammering that out to the athletes. And yeah, I'm just, you know, appreciate you having me on. That's for sure, man. I really, really appreciate this.
Yeah, of course, man. No, like I said, it's been to make it for some time. So I appreciate the just the patience and everything. But I'll make sure I link everything you said down, just so if anyone wants to reach out to you, they absolutely can. But Ty, I appreciate you again, man. And next, we gotta get you on again, man. You got way too much to talk about.
Yeah, hey, it's the off season, man. I got plenty of time now.
Got you, man.
Thank you for listening to the Basketball and Barbells podcast. I really hope you all got major value from today's episode. Please leave a rating and review of the show, and don't forget to tune into the next episode.